A stadium in São Paulo. 80,000 people, they don't speak Korean, but they know every word. That image is not an accident. It is the result of 30 years of deliberate engineering. The question worth asking is not why K-pop is popular. The real question is how a small domestic music industry rebuilt itself from scratch and became one of the most coordinated cultural export machines on the planet. Grace, that story starts not with a stadium, but with a television studio in Seoul in March 1992. Before the early 1990s, Korean mainstream pop was built around trot ballads and television variety formats, polished, safe, controlled by broadcasters. Then Seo Taiji and boys walked onto a live TV audition and performed something the judges had never seen. Rap, synchronized street dance. Youth fashion that looked nothing like the stage costumes of the era. The judges gave them the lowest score of the night. The public gave them something else entirely, a number one hit. Their debut did not just chart, it cracked the existing formula open. They proved that Korean audiences wanted music that reflected youth culture, not just broadcast-approved entertainment. That shift, Grace, is the first domino. Now, the key idea here is what happened next. Entrepreneurs saw the rupture created by early performers and built a machine around it. One of the earliest agencies to formalize what became the idol trainee system was among those that emerged in the 1990s. Think of it like a startup's talent pipeline, but for pop stars. Agencies recruit teenagers, sometimes younger. They train them for years in singing, dancing, languages, media presentation, and personal image. Many trainees never debut. The ones who do are assembled into groups built around specific musical and visual concepts. One of the first major groups produced through this model became a significant success. The system is high investment and high attrition by design. These agencies are not record labels in the traditional sense. They function as vertically integrated production and marketing organizations. Music, choreography, styling, videos, touring, merchandise, all coordinated under one roof. For anyone with a background in B2B or startup development, the model is recognizable. It resembles a platform business that controls the full stack, talent development, intellectual property creation, content distribution, and fan monetization. YG Entertainment and JYP Entertainment each built variations on this model, each with distinct aesthetic identities. The result was not just artists, it was brands. By the early 2000s, K-pop was moving beyond Korea's borders. The term Hallyu, meaning Korean wave, describes the international spread of South Korean cultural content, music, television drama, film, fashion, and food. K-pop did not travel alone. It rode alongside Korean dramas that were already popular across East and Southeast Asia. A documented early milestone, a concert in Beijing drew massive crowds and signaled that Korean pop had genuine regional pull. Various acts each extended that reach further. This was not spontaneous virality, it was coordinated localization, multilingual releases, and strategic regional touring. The next turning point was technological. Broadband internet and YouTube removed the gatekeepers. Before digital platforms, breaking into a foreign music market required local radio, local television, local label deals. YouTube changed that equation entirely. A music video released in Seoul could be watched in São Paulo, Lagos, or Toronto within hours. Fan communities formed online, they translated lyrics, they created reaction videos, they organized streaming campaigns, K-pop agencies designed for this. Releases became visually distinctive, built for screen sharing, multilingual lyrics and international collaborations lowered the entry barrier for non-Korean speakers. That means the distribution system was, in part, built by the fans themselves. PSY's Gangnam Style in 2012 was a major international breakthrough. It showed that a Korean language pop video could achieve enormous global visibility through online sharing, but PSY's moment was largely viral. What BTS built was different. They used social media, narrative continuity, and direct fan communication to develop the ARMY fandom into an active global distribution network. Their single Dynamite debuted at number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Blackpink extended the model further, becoming among the first K-pop female groups to reach number one on both the US and UK albums charts, while building global brand partnerships across fashion and beauty. The scale of this is worth pausing on. By 2018, South Korea's cultural and creative industries employed more than 650,000 people and exported cultural content worth more than 11 trillion won. K-pop generates spillover effects across tourism, cosmetics, food, and language learning. The business model converts fan attention into recordings, concerts, memberships, merchandise, brand deals, and intellectual property. Albums are designed as collectibles, photo cards drive repeat purchases, fan meetings and live streams create recurring revenue. That is not a music industry. That is a media platform with music at the center. Remember this. K-pop's rise was not about catchy songs finding lucky audiences. It was about the coordination of talent development, production quality, media strategy, brand storytelling, platform distribution, and highly organized fan communities. Seiya Taiji and Boys broke the old formula in 1992. Agencies like SM, YG, and JYP industrialized what came next. Hallyu carried it across Asia, YouTube and social media carried it to the world,
and acts like BTS and Blackpink proved that fandom, when treated as a community rather than a consumer base, becomes the most powerful distribution channel ever built. Grace, that is the deeper lesson here, and it applies well beyond music. Now, none of this came without cost. The trainee system is demanding by design. Young performers spend years in intensive preparation, and many never debut at all. Contract disputes between artists and agencies have surfaced repeatedly. Mental health pressures inside the idol system are well documented. The always-on nature of fandom creates its own strain for artists and fans alike. Cultural appropriation debates have followed K-pop's global expansion, particularly around its borrowing from Black American musical traditions. These tensions are real. They do not cancel the achievement, but they are part of the full picture. Any honest account of K-pop's rise has to hold both things at once: a genuinely innovative system and a system with serious human costs built into its structure. Think of K-pop agencies the way you might think of a vertically integrated media startup. They do not just release music, they develop intellectual property, control the full production stack, and then convert fan attention into multiple revenue streams simultaneously. Albums are designed as collectibles. Photo cards drive repeat purchases. Fan meetings, live streams, and membership platforms create recurring revenue. Concerts and brand partnerships layer on top. By 2018, South Korea's cultural and creative industries employed more than 650,000 people and exported cultural content worth more than 11 trillion won. That is not a music industry operating at scale. That is a platform business with music at the center. The key idea is that K-pop does not travel alone. It pulls other industries with it. Tourism to South Korea has been directly linked to Hallyu interest.
Korean language learning surged globally as fans sought to understand lyrics without waiting for translations. Korean beauty and skincare products found new international markets through the same cultural pipeline. Korean food followed. The government recognized this early. South Korea's cultural expansion involved interaction between private entertainment companies and public sector cultural and export policies, working together, not government action alone. That coordination between private innovation and public strategy is a model worth studying for anyone thinking about national brand building or market entry. Grace, here is where this connects directly to what you know. K-pop's rise is a case study in coordinated system design. The music was the product, but the system was the business. Talent development, production quality, visual storytelling, platform distribution, and community-led fan engagement were not separate functions. They were integrated from the start. That is the same logic behind any durable B2B brand or platform startup. Control the full stack, design for distribution, and treat your community as a co-creator, not just a consumer. The agencies that understood this earliest built the most enduring acts. Remember this. Seo Taiji and Boys broke the old formula in 1992. Agencies like SM, YG, and JYP industrialized what came next. Hallyu carried it across Asia. YouTube and social media carried it to the world. And acts like BTS and Blackpink proved that fandom, when treated as a community rather than a consumer base, becomes among the most powerful distribution channels ever built. K-pop's deeper lesson is not about catchy songs finding lucky audiences. It is about the coordination of talent, production, storytelling, technology, and organized community. Grace, that lesson applies well beyond music. It applies to any system trying to build something that lasts. Think of K-pop agencies the way you might think of a vertically integrated media startup. They do not just release music, they develop intellectual property, control the full production stack, and convert fan attention into multiple revenue streams at once. Albums are designed as collectibles. Photo cards drive repeat purchases. Fan meetings, live streams, and membership platforms create recurring revenue. Concerts and brand partnerships layer on top. That is not a music industry operating at scale. That is a platform business with music at the center. Now, K-pop does not travel alone. It pulls other industries with it. Tourism to South Korea has been directly linked to Hallyu interest. Korean language learning surged globally as fans sought to understand lyrics without waiting for translations. Korean beauty and skincare products found new international markets through the same cultural pipeline. Korean food followed. South Korea's cultural expansion involved interaction between private entertainment companies and public sector cultural and export policies working together. That coordination between private innovation and public strategy is a model worth studying for anyone thinking about national brand building or market entry. None of this came without cost. The trainee system is demanding by design. Young performers spend years in intensive preparation, and many never debut at all. Contract disputes between artists and agencies have surfaced repeatedly. Mental health pressures inside the idol system are well documented. The always-on nature of fandom creates its own strain for artists and fans alike. Cultural appropriation debates have followed K-pop's global expansion, particularly around its borrowing from Black American musical traditions. These tensions are real. They do not cancel the achievement, but they are part of the full picture. Any honest account of K-pop's rise has to hold both things at once. Grace, here is where this connects directly to what you know. K-pop's rise is a case study in coordinated system design. The music was the product, but the system was the business. Talent development, production quality, visual storytelling, platform distribution, and community-led fan engagement were not separate functions. They were integrated from the start. That is the same logic behind any durable B2B brand or platform startup. Control the full stack, design for distribution, and treat your community as a co-creator, not just a consumer. The agencies that understood this earliest built the most enduring acts. Remember this. CO Taiji and Boys broke the old formula in 1992. Agencies like SM, YG, and JYP industrialized what came next. Hallyu carried it across Asia, YouTube and social media carried it to the world. Acts like BTS and Blackpink proved that fandom, when treated as a community rather than a consumer base, becomes among the most powerful distribution channels ever built. K-pop's deeper lesson is not about catchy songs finding lucky audiences. It is about the coordination of talent, production, storytelling, technology, and organized community. Grace, that lesson applies well beyond music. It applies to any system trying to build something that lasts.